So I'm pretty excited to be up here to talk about Berkeley versus Big Soda. For those of you who may not know, Berkeley was the first city to pass a sugary sweetened beverage tax on the distribution of sugary drinks in our city. And 31 different cities have tried to do this, and only one has succeeded, and it was our city. And it was due to very strategic collaboration, learning lessons learned from other campaigns. We took a lot of lessons from Richmond, California, and El Monte, and some of the other campaigns where we saw that the beverage industry, the first thing that they do is they come in and they start to drive wedges between communities, especially communities of color. They start saying that this is going to make groceries more expensive, that it's going to hurt poor people the most. And, so for us in Berkeley, one of the ways that we kept the beverage industry from coming in and driving wedges between our communities, our coalition, is we had communities of color at the strategic planning level from the very beginning. And by having us at the table from the very beginning, and we weren't just there a lot of times when we pulled into coalitions, we're usually pulled in as kind of like tokens. You know, it's like, oh, we need brown people at the table or African-American people at the table, but we don't really have very much agency or say. But, you know, to the credit of this coalition, it was a very equitable coalition where we were able to actually shape the messaging on the campaign. And so what follows is I'm going to tell a little bit of a story about this. I don't have as many graphs and charts and p-values on my presentation, but I think at the end of the day, I think you guys are going to be okay with that. So exactly 1 year ago today, actually exactly 1 year ago tomorrow, but I'll pretend it's tomorrow. Exactly 1 year ago tomorrow was the day that we had the election. And going into it, we knew we had very strong support. We had polled in October of the previous year, October of 2013. This happened in 2014, November 4th, 2014. We polled in October of 2013, and we saw that we had 66% of our population, or our voters, that would approve this. I don't know how many of you are familiar with California law, the tax law especially. If the money's going to go into a general fund, you only have to win at 50% margin, 50% plus one. If you want to say that the resources from a tax are going to go into something specific like obesity prevention or physical activity or anything like that, you have to win at 66%. And so our initial polling showed us at 66%. And we thought that, you know, if we're at 66% right now, once the beverage industry comes in and does what we think they're going to do, it's going to erode, and so we should probably go with the 50%. And that's something that we did differently from San Francisco. Robin, I know you presented on San Francisco this morning. That's something that Berkeley did different from San Francisco. The other thing that we did different from San Francisco was instead of a 2 cent per ounce tax, we kept it at the one cent per ounce. And, San Francisco, even though their ballot measure did not pass, they still got a majority of the votes, and it's going to be coming back again. So exactly a year ago today, we had been canvassing for 3 or 4 months already. We had visited houses. We were getting out the vote. It says GOTV. I didn't know what that meant until this part of the campaign, and I felt kind of dumb that I didn't know. But now I know. It's like getting out the vote. It's like it's intense work. And so at the end of the day, we won. So 360. We're pretending today's tomorrow. So tomorrow, 364 days ago, we won. And initially, remember I said that we had polled at 66%? Well, we actually ended up winning at 76%. We actually went up, which is something that's unheard of. And I'll talk a little bit about how that happened. That was us about a week later after it sunk in, and we were just excited. And if you look at all the faces there, you see a lot of diversity. That's the diversity of Berkeley. That's the diversity of the team that came together to pass this tax. And, at heart, the reason we were doing it was to address obesity, was to address diabetes, was to address health disparities. In the city of Berkeley, you know, our city's only about 100,000 people. We're actually kind of a big town. But you know, we still have, and it's a fairly wealthy town comparatively speaking to some of the rural parts of California, especially. But you know, even within Berkeley, we still have our disparities. We have a shrinking African American population, a shrinking Latino population as well. Working class, it's shrinking, just because that's what's going on in the Bay Area right now. And so we knew from our health status report, you know, we're one of the few cities in California that has our own public health department, and we knew from the report that they pull out every couple of years that we had some disparities going on. The disparities in diabetes, pre-diabetes, there was some disparity. Diabetes, the disparities were greater, but when we started getting to amputations, that's when you really saw the disparities between communities of color and the mainstream community. So, you know, we all had this common goal. Even though we had this common goal, there were some of us that were at the table because we just wanted to beat Big Soda. There were some of us, because we're anti-corporate, we're like that in Berkeley sometimes. There were some of us that really wanted to address health disparities. There were some of us that wanted to fund cooking and gardening classes because the USDA had pulled the cooking and gardening funds from the schools, and so we needed to figure out a way to replace that. So there were some of us that were coming to the table for that. But in the end, all of us were joined by this need to address health equity. That was our rallying call. This is just another picture, kind of drives that same point home. You know, nutrition education programs of the Berkeley Unified School District. So we really wanted to raise a dedicated revenue source, create a dedicated revenue source that could fund school and community-based efforts to address some of these health disparities and also to reduce the sugary drink consumption. But you know, it wasn't easy, and we had to overcome faux and hired measured efforts. The measure was D. And so you can see on the picture to the right, that's our farmer's market. You see two folks with the No on D shirt. And what the industry did is they went and hired folks actually from outside of our city to come in and to try to get people to sign a petition to get us to not do this. And then on the right, these are hired folks again putting up all these posters. You can't really see it from the picture, but if you look at all the light poles, you'll see that they all have this white thing on it. All of them are little No on D signs. They saturated our city. They bought up all of our bus shelters. They bought up all the ad spaces on our buses. They went into our metro system, our BART system, and they bought up all the ad space in our BART system. This is the walking up to the pay for your ticket to get your BART ticket. They had it everywhere. They spent $2.4 million to try to defeat our measure. Previous to this campaign, the most that had ever been spent on a Berkeley campaign effort was $600,000, and that was by both sides. So they spent $2.4 million to try to defeat us. And effectively, on paper, when you look at the final tally, it says that we spent $900,000 on our part of the campaign. But what happened is that Bloomberg came in, unbeknownst to us, not coordinated with us, and he put an ad into the World Series that was happening right about this time. San Francisco was playing the Royals last year. And that added $600,000 to the money that was spent on our campaign. But effectively, when the industry was sending out three mailers per week, we couldn't respond. We barely got lawn signs printed, and we sent out a few mailers, but we were on shoestrings. And so, you know, how do you go up against a huge, huge industry like this that has such deep pockets? And this is how we did it. It was just people power. We went block by block, house by house, neighbor to neighbor, and just explained. And we started early. We started in July. We started early. So when I showed the picture of the No on D folks there, they didn't come out until like September 13th-ish. But we had been out since July, and we literally just started going house to house. Robin was there. Lynn was there. Robin, you want to raise your hand? Lynn, you want to raise your hand? They were both there. All of us spent many days, weekends between July and November just canvassing. And I was in charge of District 2, which was the most diverse district in the city. And this was my team right there to the left. And you know, it was not a hard sell with our communities of color. They may not want to give up the parents and the older adults may not want to give up their sugary drink consumption, but they don't want their kids to start. And so, you know, that was always a point of where we could start the conversation. It's funny because we never really heard the word regressivity from the folks that we were talking to on the ground. We heard it mostly from the beverage industry and in their messaging, the nanny state, the regressivity. We heard that from industry. We didn't hear that from people on the ground. So we won. So now what? So, you know, we have to figure out how to collect the revenues. And then also, because we made it a 50% tax, that meant that the tax was going to go into the general fund. And by going into the general fund, we needed to assure the electorate that that there would be some kind of pressure on the city council to make sure that these revenues, not these revenues specifically, but revenues in general, got invested into community and school-based efforts for diabetes prevention. And so so the city, in our legislation, we said we will collect this tax, this is the rate, this is what we're going to collect it on, and we will create a panel of experts to advise the city on how to invest these resources. Because it was a 50% tax, that's not a one-to-one. So if we collect $100,000, it doesn't mean that $100,000 exactly must go into prevention. Because if we wanted to have that kind of threshold, we had to have a 66% ballot initiative. So that's a little bit confusing. I hope it made sense. It's the end of the day. So the panel of experts, I'm on the panel of experts, and this is our charge. We make recommendations on how and to what extent the city should establish and or fund programs to reduce the consumption of sugary sweetened beverages in Berkeley and to address the effects of such consumption. And each of the council members appointed one person, and the mayor got an appointment as well. So there's 9 of us on this committee, and you know, everyone on this list worked very hard to get this tax passed. So, you know, the intent of why we were doing it kind of survived and is embedded in the panel of experts, and we're trying to hold true to the original intent of why we were doing this. And the, Poki Namkung from District 8, she's a former health officer for the city of Berkeley. Pat Crawford, I don't know, she's the big name in nutrition. She runs a center, health and nutrition at Cal Berkeley. And you know, we've got some big firepower on this board. So we projected revenues for the general tax from 1.5 to 2 million, and for a city our size, that's an incredible amount of money to be putting into prevention. Through a study that PHI just did, it's confirmed that we already knew we had collected the $692,000 in the first 6 months of the. We've collected $692,000. 2 minutes? Oh no. but let me show you guys. So we're using an IOM, a scientific approach, an evidence-based approach, to accelerate how we're going to get to obesity reduction and diabetes prevention. But you know, has it been a success? As soon as we started collecting money, actually even before we started collecting money, the beverage industry was going out and saying, we weren't doing it right. We weren't collecting money. We hadn't even started collecting money. We weren't collecting it right. People didn't know what was going on. They started mixing everything up, trying to make it sound like everyone was confused. Articles started coming out that, you know, we went and we looked at these two different stores, one in outside of Berkeley, one in Berkeley, and prices are the same. The tax isn't working. Another from Glamour magazine, Glamour Health, they're weighing in that way. California Healthline, yeah, we like them. Well, we like Glamour Health too, but we like California Healthline. You know, critics saying soda's not working as billed, proponents say it will pay off in the long run. And so then there was an evaluation that was done. I call it a helicopter evaluation. I don't know if John Colley or David Friswold are in here, but I wrote a response to this. They came in, and their analysis is just flawed. They used this one economic model, 4 different variations on an economic model that had really flawed assumptions. And so they were basically saying that the prices weren't going up either. But you know, for us, we have to succeed in Berkeley. And the reason we have to succeed is for everyone else that's going to be trying to do this. And based on that faux research paper that was put out by these guys, when the city of Chicago was thinking about doing this is an editorial in the Sun Times, and they were basing this on the research on that paper that was done by these previous authors, flawed. And we've now got confirmation. This is what I was talking about, PHI. They've done some work, and they have confirmed that prices, it's a more rigorous evaluation, that prices actually are going up. But, you know, for me, prices going up, that's not the measure of success for me. And I think on the expert panel, I can't speak, this is not an official word on the expert panel, but we see the price, there's a model that if you raise prices, that consumption will drop. And, you know, that's fine. But for many of us, especially those that work under a health equity lens, what we want to do is invest in the communities. We're more interested in a dedicated revenue source to invest in those communities that are hardest hit, to build their capacity so that they will choose not to, or they will have more readily available, healthier drinks. So, you know, for us, it's good. I mean, it's okay that the price is going up, but for us, that's not the end. The way we're going to measure success, because the other thing to remember is the beverage industry controls the prices. If they didn't want us to succeed, they could do things to make it look like they're not. And they're doing that in some places. We suspect they're doing that in some places in Mexico. So for us, when we're going to measure success on the panel of experts, we're going to measure it by where we make investments. When we make an investment, you know, the population that's receiving direct services through this investment, are their attitudes changing? Are they building skills? Are they building knowledge about the dangers of sugary drinks? Are they changing their behavior by consuming less fully sugared drinks? And, you know, that's where we're going to measure. We're going to measure directly on the investments. Because if you come in and say, diabetes rates still aren't going down, and this is what industry does, even though there's a huge lag time between the time you put in an intervention and when you start to see it manifest itself at the population health level, there's a huge lag time between obesity and diabetes. But, you know, I've seen charts that they've put out that say sugary drink consumption is going down, but obesity is still going up. And it's like real time that they're showing both of these things. They don't account for the lag time. The other reason that we need to succeed, and I'm finishing right now. The other reason we need to succeed is because the day after that that report came out, that Cornell report, they were already passing it around the California state legislature. They were already visiting all the state legislators and dropping off that data. And the reason is because we're trying to take the lessons that we learned from Berkeley, and we're trying to get a health impact fee passed at the statewide level. So this is some lessons learned. You know, we're super excited. We're a year in. I can't wait to get back tomorrow because I think we're going to celebrate a little bit. Everything is working as it should. We're doing great, contrary to everything that the beverage industry would tell you. And I can take questions at the end.
Well, it's up to you.
Okay, well, we can take a couple of questions now, and then at the end if there are any questions. Rebecca? I don't know. Do I agree with your comment?
Okay. Yes.
No, okay.
Yes, well, so this is out today. This is the head of Coca-Cola. They're characterizing their life in another Southern country. And he is quoted just now in the article saying, drinking 1 to 2 sodas a day is no wrong. That's the big difference with tobacco, that it's a product that's intrinsically harmful.
So basically, you have the head of Coca Cola, Pepsi saying that 1 to 2 Cokes a day is not harmful.
1 to 2 sodas a day is not harmful.
And
what can you do about
that? Dr. Stanhope out of UC Davis has done conclusive research that where she very closely monitored consumption of sugary drinks with human subjects. And what she found, and I can't get the statistics exactly right now, but with just, I think it's with 2 per day, you have a 25 to 30% greater risk of contracting diabetes. And with just 1 a day, I think it goes up to 12%. So this guy's anecdotal marketing line is counter to science. But, you know, unfortunately, I'm getting really used to his comments carrying a lot more weight than the science does. So, you know, that's why when you all, I know you guys are, many of you are probably on listservs that we're on, and you see something's happening in a city that they're trying to pass some legislation, and you see people coming out with some dumb comments or comments that are inaccurate, you know, please weigh in. We need all the help we can get, especially in this next year that's coming up. There's a few cities in California, other cities that are going to be trying to pass this, and we're going to be coming back again at the statewide level with a sugary fee. And I know that there's other areas as well. It's for 20 years. It's for 20 years, if I remember correctly. Yeah.
And given what Mexico's considering in terms of changing its tax, moving on the basis of, I think, sugar content as opposed to grams?
I'm not sure about that, but I can tell you that I'm the head of an advocate organization in California. We help pass legislation, or sometimes we try to kill legislation, depending on what it is. I can tell you that when I'm sitting at the table and on the other side of the table is the industry, if we start talking about sugar content, they will hold up a muffin and say this has this much sugar content. It weakens our argument. So the metabolic effects of a muffin and the metabolic effects of a soda are so vastly different that we need to keep them as separate as possible. And so by doing that, I'm afraid that it helps bring that together instead of amplifying the distance that should be between them. I don't know, Rebecca, do you want to do
that?
All right, we'll move on. Thank you.